Oh, he's back.
Yeah, Don is back. David's been filling with news. He's had this rumination building up inside of him for hours here. This is such a neat topic. Don was talking about the big quiet out there. I'm a science fiction fan, too. Growing up, I read a whole series of science fiction books by Andre Norton, very famous science fiction writer. And it was all about traveling from planet to planet. It was, and of course, C.S. Lewis wrote science fiction, too. But he wrote it with a little different slant. You mean to tell me there's nobody out there? Surely, with all these huge antenna, these arrays around the world pointed into outer space, listening for low frequencies and high frequencies and everything in between, there's been nothing?
There has been absolutely nothing. Oh. And there's been a recent paper by some researchers from Oxford who are kind of baffled in saying, hey, we've been listening, found nothing. Maybe our assumptions are incorrect. And there was a fellow by the name of Frank Drake, an astronomer. Frank Drake in 1961 proposed a way of answering the question, is there life out there? And he proposed what is now called the Drake equation, where you multiply the probability of life evolving by the likelihood of life developing into intelligence necessary for interplanetary travel and communication. So of course the question, the problem with this equation is you have to make some assumptions about the likelihood of life developing, intelligent life, of course, developing.
Well, that's the key, because there's no one is saying that there's life out there somewhere is impossible. Now, the Bible doesn't tell us that God did, but I wouldn't put it past him to have created life elsewhere. And I guess we have seen some signs of some sort of bacteria in meteorite particles, but that's far from. I don't think they say much, those bacteria.
Well, if indeed there are bacteria and not just little tubes, crystalline tubes that, just naturally form without any type of organism. So, yes, the real question is, boils down to one or two. If you believe in evolution, then, and life evolved here on Earth, of course, the assumption would be, well, if it evolved here on Earth, it's going to evolve somewhere, certainly in our universe. And that's the assumption that they're using. And therefore, if you have a wrong assumption about how old the Earth is, and certainly a wrong assumption about how old the universe is, then that's going to be a problem for you as well. So if we have a young Earth and a young universe, and indeed we didn't evolve into complex beings that we are, then we have a problem with this, because we can be searching and searching and searching and not find anything. As you kind of indicated, God certainly could have put intelligent life on other planets or other in other galaxies, and we're not aware of that. But that's the point. He would have had to put them there, because life as we know it here on Earth, that is, certainly didn't evolve over time, and we have much, much evidence of that. Because, I mean, if you look at the probability of life evolving, just look at, we've got 3 billion DNA base pairs. So, 3 billion DNA base pairs, that from the more we research our DNA, the more we find that, hey, this isn't just a random sequence. This is a very specific sequence that is put together to help define you and me. Yes, our DNA is slightly different because, guess what? We look different, we act different, we think different. But for the most part, our DNA is very, very similar. And to get 3 billion, to get a sequence that is 3 billion, long, you know, each base pair could be one of four choices. So that's one, that is 4 to the 3 billionth power. That's the probability of that sequence coming together. That's outside of any possible, you know, event happening. It is, you know, 10 to the 50th power is considered by probabilistic statisticians to be improbable, mm-hmm. you know, an improbable event. So now we have 4 to the 3 billion. I mean, that is a very, very improbable event. But the interesting thing about this particular article and about the scientists at Oxford, they point out that, hey, maybe our assumptions are wrong. Maybe the likelihood of life arising is much, much, much lower than we think. And indeed, you know, maybe there isn't much chance at all for life evolving. They go to the point of almost saying that we are unique in the universe, but stop short because, you know, these folks work at SETI and they need a job, so they can't.
That's
say,
true. The research grant money keeps coming in, doesn't it?
Yeah, they can't say, for example, that there's no point in continuing this work anymore. So they conclude by saying, well, we just need to look harder and we need to look longer. So, of course, the assumption is we can keep our jobs.
There are a couple of assumptions here. And one of the things they do talk about in this article is the unique characteristics of Earth in its position with respect to the sun and the moon and the stars and water and gravity and electromagnetic fields and temperature, and it's just the right temperature and just the right place to allow us life. And they're looking for similar circumstances elsewhere, and while they occasionally come up with a planet discovery that they say, well, it's a little like Earth, even though it might be bigger or colder or hotter, nothing is quite like Earth for generating life. And I have another what-if question for you. What if there is real intelligent life out there and they don't want to talk to us? I mean, they're happy on their 40-acre farms raising vegetables and they have decided the technology is not the route to go.
Well, if they never did put together a radio, then that would be certainly the case. But
this would make them a happy race of beings then, wouldn't it, probably?
Right.
If I can't imagine being without radio.
Yeah, no, this planet is bathed in electromagnetic radiation from all of the radio chatter and the internet chatter and all of the, you know, now the satellite beams going back and forth. There's certainly, we are radiating much, much talk and much evidence that we exist here on this planet. So unless everybody is farmers, and like I said, they haven't discovered electricity yet, they would be quiet until they did, and then we aren't necessarily broadcasting that. Oh, hello, here we are. You know, is anybody out there? Now maybe the group at SETI is doing that, but mm-hmm. you know, for the most part, it's just our normal daily routine of communicating back and forth, and since the event, as I said, of radio communication, we now have radio waves that are being beamed out from this planet, and one could receive that from another planet or another, in this galaxy or, you know, a galaxy further away. Mm-hmm. So it's, the assumption that life did evolve on another planet, I think, is obviously because life didn't evolve here. You know, life isn't going to evolve in another planet. And if you look at it even from a secular point of view, they say, well, yes, life, we are here, so therefore life had to evolve. That must mean then that life is, possible on another planet. And maybe God did create another planet out there where life is possible. But let's take that position, and let's say that God did create, you know, other humans or other intelligent beings, and on another planet, even in a distant galaxy, that, you know, it would take us a long time to even communicate with one another. What are the consequences of that? You know, did those people not keep God's commandments and plan? Did they too sin like we sang, that like Adam and Eve sinned? And if Adam and Eve, I mean, if they did sin, then that would mean that God would have to send his son to that planet as well in order to redeem them. And Jesus would have to die all over again.
Interesting idea.
Yeah, I don't know if he would do that.
You know, C.S. Lewis postulated, and I'm struck, it was a three book series on his attempt at science fiction, and it was engrossing. It was wonderful stuff. But the implicit assumption was that life on this one distant planet was perfect. They were God fearing and Christ believing, and they were watching Earth with a keen eye because that was the realm of Satan. And so in that scenario, C.S. Lewis was writing about a planet that was perfect. They had obeyed God from the very beginning and stayed in that primordial condition of perfection. So, yeah, this just highlights the bevy of assumptions that science has had to make. One, that there's another planet that could support life, because there's so many planets out there that one of them surely is like us and could support life like us, but the odds against that are just phenomenal. In fact, I'm going to read a paragraph from the article here, and quoting a book by Guillermo Gonzalez and Jay Richards, and the book is called The Privileged Planet. They write that the fact that conditions necessary for life exist on even one planet is a statistical miracle. That those conditions might exist somewhere else, let alone that extraterrestrial organisms there could evolve the brain power necessary to travel the stars, is, there's no other way to put it, astronomical. And there's your 10 to the 50th power deal there. And it's just a huge leap of logic to think that even if there were somebody out there, I think maybe they've heard us already and they said, don't talk to them. We don't want to be like that. No.
Yeah, that's a problem. They have problems from time to time.
See, we're the aliens.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's been a lot of research over a lot of years, and nothing's been found yet, and they're still looking, and there's still scientists making a good living at this. And I guess that's just okay. Don, I'm glad we could get you on through all the trail here this morning with electricity and without electricity and internet glitches and things. But good to talk to you as always on this Tuesday morning. We'll look forward to next, okay?
Okay, very good. Well, yeah, I'm glad we worked through the problems. And hopefully we'll have a clear sail next Tuesday.
Yeah, well, next hour should be back to normal, except, David, I'm sorry, but your muffin break is by the boards. You're going to have to work the next hour. Yeah.
What?
Just
what?
The way it works.
What?
I'm sorry. There's no two ways about it.
I'm going to go talk to the steward.
Oh, calm down.
I'll be right back.
Just stay calm, David. You can handle this. Don, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Okay. So long.